historically splendid abodes, the official podcast of Toronto Philippe. Exploring, if you will, practical philosophy, from science and the workings of the mind to spirituality, esotericism, and magic. Stooping down, dipping my wings, I came into the darkly splendid abodes. Jeremy Crow is a longtime proponent and practitioner of Luciferianism, and his Novus Ordo Luciferi and Flambeau Noir initiatives have helped promote the Lightbearer ethos internationally. We'll chat about Jeremy's Promethean efforts, find out what Luciferianism actually is, as well as discuss the overlap between Luciferianism and Thelema. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
Love is the law. Love under will.
Welcome, Jeremy. I have my guest Jeremy Crow today, a longtime friend and somebody I hadn't seen for quite a bit of time up until relatively recently as well. So how have you been doing?
I've been doing great. How about yourself?
Great. Yeah, like things have been going well for Toronto Thelema. We've got, you know, a lot of activity going on. It sounds like you also have a lot of activity going on. So you're like a representative, pretty strong representative of the Luciferianism sort of approach to spirituality. And I wanted to chew your ear a little bit about that and find out a little bit more deeply about what Luciferianism is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been talking about Luciferianism online and in public for at least 25 years or so.
Hmm.
Actually, the first public lecture that I did on the subject was at a Toronto Thelema event
which really
that
cool.
You hosted.
And it was also not 25 years ago, but so I guess you hadn't done anything up until roughly, what would have that been, maybe 12 years in or something like that?
Yeah, about that. I hadn't done any public lectures in person on the subject, but I had done a lot of stuff online. I'd written articles and put out information about Luciferianism and, in particular, Gnostic Luciferianism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what is Gnostic Luciferianism? I imagine people who listen to this kind of a podcast could infer.
Yeah. Well, there are different branches of Luciferianism, you could say, and ultimately it's up to the individual because it's a non-dogmatic path or, you know, it's hard to call it a system because everybody does it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
There is no Pope of Luciferianism, you know, and there never will be. And if there is, it's false, you know.
If you meet the Pope of Luciferianism on the path, kill the Pope of Luciferianism.
Yeah, basically. Because, as I said, it's a non-dogmatic thing. And each person comes to it on their own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And back when I realized that I was a Luciferian, there wasn't a heck of a lot of information out there about Luciferianism. Mm. I'd basically cobbled it together from my other esoteric studies, and it just came to me as an epiphany. And I kind of saw this bronze thread through Western esotericism that the word Lucifer just seemed to resonate with more than anything else.
Yeah, and when it comes to the word Luciferianism or Lucifer, it's obviously a triggering term as far as, you know, mainstream society goes, because it would presumably be synonymous with the devil and Satan and all these dark forces that are lying in wait for the good Christian on the road.
Right.
But
yeah, in popular culture, it's generally considered synonymous with Satan. And when people hear the word Luciferianism, or when you hear it referred to by say, like conspiracy theorists and such, they're usually using it synonymously with Satanism, or they believe that it's a branch of Satanism, but it's not. Well, it's hard for me to say that as a definitive statement, because like I said, it's non-dogmatic. So there are branches of Luciferianism that are quite similar to a lot of branches of Satanism. And like, for example, you have Michael W. Ford is probably one of the most prolific authors on the subject of Luciferianism. And he talks a lot about the adversarial current. And he blends that with his form of Luciferianism. And the word adversary, or adversary, where adversarial comes from, is the literal meaning of the word Satan. Adversary is the literal English translation of the word Satan from ancient Hebrew.
Yeah, so presumably that would feed really strongly into Luciferianism as well, just by virtue of the fact that it's acting satanically against certain types of dogma, for instance. So you have like the whole, I know that you like to use the example of Prometheus, right? Bringing the fire of the gods down and giving it to humanity.
Exactly. And that is where I feel the core of Luciferianism is. That's pretty common amongst most Luciferians. And I like to refer to it as the light bearer archetype. And Prometheus is a excellent example of that archetype. So you have, like you said, you have the acquisition of hidden or forbidden knowledge and rebelling against a system in order to disseminate that knowledge. And ultimately, usually that undermines some system of power that is built upon hiding, twisting knowledge, and exploiting ignorance. And so often there is some sort of backlash from those who benefit from that system of power that had been undermined. And that, essentially, in a nutshell, is what I like to refer to as the light bearer archetype, or the Luciferian archetype.
Yeah, which, and I can see how that would obviously appeal to a lot of people, especially people who are interested in this kind of thing, like the occult sciences and that sort of thing, which is very much against, I guess, social norms in a big way. And the idea of having this hidden wisdom that's going to lead you to some kind of, you know, however you want to delineate it, some kind of power, some kind of hidden powers.
Yeah, well, in a sense, it's taking back your power that has been that has been stolen from you through keeping you ignorant.
And yeah, I mean, if it is non-dogmatic, what kind of systems? Like, I guess you said it's not really, you don't want to call it systematic per se, but that becomes, I always find this is tricky territory. It's sort of like, I mean, just to use an example, with Toronto Thelema, I'm always open about the fact that it's not connected with any orders or groups or anything like that. It's just its own thing. And the idea behind it is that it's a community thing. It's supported by the community. It's driven by the community. It's trying as best as possible not to have a hierarchical kind of structure, because the goal of it is to foster community and that sort of thing, rather than a rigid sort of system or something. But inevitably, you know, we get people assuming that it's somehow like it's a representative of the OTO, or it's a representative of such and such temple, or it is a temple or something like that. So I kind of feel like you must run into similar issues when you're dealing with Luciferianism.
Yeah, definitely. You find that there are actually a lot of solo practitioners in Luciferianism. And some people even declare that you can't be a Luciferian if you are part of some kind of hierarchical group. And I get what they're saying, but there's nuance there. And I do think that there is a power to getting together with other people that are doing the same thing as you or similar things and cooperating and that sort of thing and learning from each other. And of course, if there's people that have been doing it for much longer and are very knowledgeable in the subject, then they have a lot to share. So definitely it's something that is very much at the forefront of the mind of a Luciferian, is trying to avoid getting caught up in some sort of hierarchy that is gatekept and permission based, like with an authority figure that is granting you access to knowledge in little bits and pieces as you're able to go through the degrees of a hierarchy or something like that.
Yeah, and I know from what you had been saying in sort of conversation, you offer a system that I keep using that word. Now that you've said you don't want to use that word, now I keep using the word system. But you offer a sort of like you're putting together some kind of a group sort of thing for the internet where people can go through their own self-initiations. Or they can take the information sort of at their own pace and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So when I was hesitating about using the word system, it was about referring to Luciferianism as a whole, as a system. Luciferianism isn't a system. It's more of a philosophy. And there are various different systems that can be described as Luciferian systems. And I have, in the course of, you know, over 25 years of being a Luciferian and over 30 years of being a serious occultist, I've developed my own system of occultism that I refer to as Luciferian alchemy. And so I set up an esoteric order referred to as the Novus Ordo Luciferi. And I use that as a vehicle to teach that system to dedicated members who are interested in specifically learning that particular occult system.
Is there like an in-person kind of element to that, or is it just mainly an online kind of entity?
It was founded on the winter solstice of 2023. So it's only about a year and a half old. And right now, there are no official local branches, but we are in the process of establishing those. So, for example, I believe that Texas, which is kind of funny because it seems to be a hotbed of Luciferianism. You wouldn't expect. I'm working on getting some local events happening in the Toronto area and surrounding areas. California, which is not unexpected, I don't think. Florida, we have a bunch of members in Florida. And actually, we have members in, I think, over a dozen countries now. Definitely over a dozen countries, but I'm not sure exactly how many, because not everybody tells me where they are. But what I do know, we have members in over a dozen countries already. And so we can have branches all over the world if people are interested in that and have the initiative to set them up. And I'm providing guidance in how they can do that.
Cool. What kind of transformations, because it's an alchemical process, it sounds like. What kind of transformations do people undergo in Luciferianism?
Well, let me just kind of take a step back and get back to the Luciferian or Lightbearer archetype a little bit. So the core element of Luciferianism, and there's a lot of misconceptions about what that means to be a Luciferian. And a lot of people automatically, especially people coming from mainstream religion, they automatically assume that that means worshiping Lucifer, mm-hmm. or worshiping an entity with a proper name of Lucifer. And while there are some people who do that, I don't think that it's the majority.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think that that's necessarily important whether or not you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most important part, to me anyways, this is my opinion, the most important part of being a Luciferian is seeking to embody the light bearer archetype in your own unique way, based on the situation that you find yourself in and the knowledge that you happen to have acquired and that sort of thing. And there are lots of people and mythological characters who have embodied that light bearer archetype and therefore have earned the title of Lucifer.
Mm.
And so the goal or the practice, the way that you would live your life as a Luciferian is to try and become a Lucifer in your own right.
I see.
Or a light bearer. And so that is the core of the practice. Now, to do that, you have to be in possession of some sort of knowledge that is typically hidden or forbidden, or some sort of subversive truth, you know. But what you can do is you can prepare yourself to become a more effective light bearer in the world.
Mm.
And the way that you can do that is through, one way that you can do that is through Luciferian alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
So this would involve a lot of shadow work.
Mm-hmm.
Delving into things like past traumas or inner conflicts and trying to figure out what the root of those are and to resolve them. So the main process of alchemy is essentially, in Western terms especially, but it applies a lot to Eastern forms of alchemy as well, but you have the three principal elements, water, fire, and air, and they naturally combine to form the fourth element of earth. And that's basically the manifest universe. Anything, including yourself, is earth, typically. Now, through the process of alchemy, we can reverse engineer that fourth element of earth back into a chaos of its three principal elements, water, fire, and air, separate out each of those components individually, and identify, you know, essentially each of those three elements, heal and refine each of those elements individually, and then you can reintegrate them back together to reconstitute that original earth. But because it's gone through that refining process, when you do restore that earth, it is such a different thing from the original earth that you started with that we refer to it as the fifth element, which is literally the quintessence. That's what the word quintessence means, is fifth element.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a resurrected form of the original earth that has been refined. And after each of those three principal elements have been refined enough, when they are integrated, they form such a cohesive and harmonious unit that it operates as a unit, you know, rather than as three separate components that are kind of loosely tied together.
Yeah.
It's almost like taking carbon and crystallizing it into a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
You know how powerful and strong a diamond is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another analogy that you could use is an incandescent light bulb or candle. It gives off light and waste heat, and the light is not coherent. It's going all over the place in all kinds of different frequencies, all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're able to take that light and make it coherent and direct it in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. So it's not then, dispersed. Yeah.
Right. Then you can create a laser beam. And if you do it powerfully enough, you can create a laser that can cut through solid metal, mm-hmm. right? It's light, but it can cut through a solid object. That's how powerful it can be when it's directed and coherent like that. Mm-hmm. And so essentially that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to take your own soul and create that crystallization, that coherence, which I like to refer to as the complete harmonized self.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the term higher self.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, when you say the word higher self, you automatically, even if you're not conscious of it, by definition, there must be a lower self.
Yeah.
Right? Just even subconsciously. And that gives permission for you to shove down any part of yourself that you feel is unworthy or that you've rejected, and shove it down into that lower self category. Like mm-hmm. I said, even if it's on a subconscious level. But by talking about the higher self, you are reinforcing that division within your soul or psyche even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's infamously difficult when we get into those kinds of like trying to map out these different parts of the soul. Even using the term soul, a lot of people have a difficulty with, you know, like.
Yeah.
And I mean, the problem is like to some extent you could, you know, a rose by any other name still a rose.
Right.
But it does become a little bit murky. Yeah. When we end up having to say things like higher self or distinguishing these things with words. But it does seem very similar what you're talking about. It's a common trope with initiation in general, this idea of salve et coagula, you know,
right.
Bringing apart the separating the parts and then bringing them back together in a more refined state. And I like the idea that with the context of Luciferianism, it feels like very apt to consider that you are refining a sort of hollow tube in which to carry the fire of heaven.
Right. Like the reed that Prometheus carried down.
Yeah.
Right. One of the things that I use the word flambeau noir mm-hmm. to for an event that I occasionally produce, mm-hmm. which originally I just called it the International Left-Hand Path Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one was in the summer of 2012 in Toronto. Yeah. And there was an art show component, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And that part was called Darkness Visible, which is a term that is both used in Milton's Paradise Lost.
Mm-hmm.
To describe the fires of basically of hell mm-hmm. that Lucifer found himself in when he was cast out in that story. Mm-hmm. And of course, in that story, Milton was criticized for making Lucifer a hero, making him out to be a hero. They're like, you're making him sound like really relatable, you know? But the other place that I found that term darkness visible from, and this ties into how I realized that I was a Luciferian, is in Freemasonry, which is a very controversial subject to talk about Freemasonry and Luciferianism in the same sentence. Mm. But
I guess depending on who you are, but
yeah. But I was participating in what mainstream Freemasons would refer to as fringe masonry or clandestine masonry.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually a very large esoteric order that was practicing co-masonic, which is men and women equally.
Mm-hmm.
And it was modified Scottish Rite degrees for the most part. Mm-hmm. There were a few York Rite degrees in there as well to kind of flesh it out, I guess, to fill in a few gaps in the storyline of the Masonic degrees, but it was a very large, one of the biggest co-Masonic orders in the world that I was a part of. So it wasn't, I wouldn't even call it fringe really, but you know, that's what they would refer to it as. And I like to be upfront about that because people are like, oh, you weren't a real Freemason, you know. The rituals were only slightly modified through the influence of the Theosophical Society, which basically all the people at the top of this order were pretty much in the esoteric school, high-end Theosophical Society. But anyways, within the third degree ritual, and I have, you know, copies of mainstream Masonic ritual coded books, and it's in there too. And it's darkness visible. And there's one point where in the third degree ceremony where you are raised as a master mason, where you are told that the light of a master mason is actually darkness visible. And that got my brain going. And I started making all kinds of other connections to thing like references to kind of subtle references to Prometheus and a couple other things like that in the earlier grades. And that's when I realized that I was a Luciferian, is is through mainly through contemplating ideas that and symbols that I had encountered in these Masonic rituals. But anyways, we called that art show Darkness Visible as an homage to both of those references. And those are the only two main references that I found to that term. But later I renamed the conference to Flambeau Noir because another person that I had worked on helping them with their conference, they had named there something confusingly similar to mine. And people kept saying, oh, I kept contacting me about it. And I was like, I've got nothing to do with the with those events. And they're like, what? You know, I thought you were... And then I was like, no, they just named it something confusingly similar. And so I renamed it to Flambeau Noir as a way of distinguishing the thing that I produce. And that was a reference, kind of a reference to the reed that Prometheus held. The black torch is technically what that term means, translated from the French. And that torch, it carries the black flame. And you can share the black flame with others by lighting their torch without diminishing your own. And a black torch is a torch that's been used, right? A blackened torch, it's not just sitting there unused, it's been lit. So that all those ideas kind of tied into the choice for calling it that.
That's cool. How long have you been doing, well, I guess I know how long you've been doing it for, because you've been doing it since 2012, even though it wasn't necessarily under that same name at the time.
Right.
But have you been, has it been a consistent thing, or is it just, has there been a set number that you've been able to put together so far of the Flambeau Noir?
It's been a sporadic thing. It's just whenever I manage to... do it. There's a lot of work involved in doing something like that. I did that one in Toronto in 2012, and then I helped somebody else produce one in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I was heavily involved in that, although I didn't actively produce it. But I did help organize, promote. I was one of the MCs. And I gave a presentation as well during it. So I was heavily involved in that one. And I helped them. And then that was in 2014. And then I think we came back to Canada and did one in Ottawa can't remember exactly. It might have been 20. It was either 2015 or 2016. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. 2016, I think, in Ottawa, Canada. And that was the first one that was officially called Flambeau Noir. And then I produced one in Portland, Oregon. In, cool. I think that was 2018. And then that was the last in-person of Flambeau Noir. But then in 2020, I believe it was, or 2021, one of the two, one either year, I did a one in cyberspace. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2020 because it was during lockdown.
Yeah.
During the, you know, I'm not going to say the word. the lockdown that shall not be named. But everybody was kind of stir crazy and they wanted to get together, but they couldn't. And so I did one and I just did it completely for free. Oh, I managed to organize a bunch of different speakers that put together, each of them put together a prepared talk, and I just did it on my YouTube channel over the course of a long weekend. Basically, I did, there was like, I think something like 14 hours of content that was produced in that long weekend. And basically I would introduce a person and then they would come on and they would do their prepared talk. A couple of them just wanted to do an interview because they didn't feel comfortable preparing something, which is cool too. And then afterwards, I came back on and we did a bit of a question and answer, and it was all live.
Okay.
So people could leave their questions in the live chat, and I could, people, I curated those questions and ask the questions on behalf of the viewers to the, to the speaker.
How did that go?
It went really good. It was really fun, and people were really appreciative of it, and it was all free as well, which is part of the Luciferian ethos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, being a Luciferian, it's about sharing knowledge, especially with those who are looking for it.
Yeah.
It's not about trying to hound people with like, oh, you're wrong. You know, you got to learn, you figure out the truth. You know, it's not about like proselytizing or, you know, trying to convince people. It's more about making knowledge or information available so that people who are looking for it can find it.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to try and, you know, with an in-person event, you have to charge because otherwise, I mean, I couldn't afford to put on the events just out of my own pocket.
Yeah.
So you got to charge money. And
that kind also, of stuff adds up quite a bit for sure.
Yeah. And I like to give the speakers consideration for, to help them pay for their accommodations and travel and that sort of thing if I'm able to. And I was able to do that with all of the events that I produced and broke even on all of them.
Nice.
Except for the very first one. The very first one, I ended up spending $1,000 more than I recouped, but it was worth it because I learned a lot.
Yeah,
in the process.
I guess
it was the
very
first
project.
One.
Yeah, the first project you're usually going to lose out on, but then that's the one that gets the ball rolling, right?
yeah, exactly. But it's been really fun, and like I said, I try not to gatekeep information behind paywalls and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for the order that I teach dedicated members who want to learn that system for the Novus Ordo Luciferi, there is a very modest fee. It's $5 American per month. And they get access to all of the written materials that I've produced so far and continue to produce for it, which include teachings as well as practices, instructions for actual practices, and video courses.
Mm-hmm.
So courses that I've taught live, and I've brought in subject matter experts as well to help me co-teach some of these. And what we'll do is we will have these private meetings with members, and we'll do a recorded live course for the people that have shown up. And then those recordings get added to the archive. And right now we've got about 50 hours worth of recorded video lessons. Wow. And when you join the order, you get access, unlimited access to all of that material, all mm-hmm. the written material, all the archived video lessons, instantly. You get access to all of it.
And you're kind of like going at your own pace, I guess.
Yeah. So basically it's almost like, I don't know, you could think of it almost like a Netflix of the occult, where you get unlimited access to all the material for $5 a month. And I think that that's pretty reasonable, considering what's out there.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to learn about lucid dreaming, for example, there is a very in-depth 6-hour course that was originally, like all of them were originally taught live, but then recorded and added to the archive. And now there's a, it was a 4-week course that I taught, and I got really in depth into lucid dreaming and dream work. And other teachers will charge like 45, 90, yeah. 200.
I've heard of some pretty exorbitant prices for things. Yeah.
Yeah. Just for a pre-recorded video course. but, and we're adding to it all the time. So, that's what I mean by trying not to gatekeep things behind permissions and authorities of, there is a degree system in the Novus Ordo Luciferi, but it's only there for people who are overwhelmed by all the material that they get access to instantly. And they want a guided route.
Step at a time, kind of.
Yeah. So they're like, well, how do I start with this material, and how do I work through it? And but they get access to all of it all up front. And then they have a route that they can take, a logical progression through, with degree recognitions at certain checkpoints that they can get.
I'm sort of snickering because I'm picturing talking about it in this way makes it it does make it seem kind of silly having like these secret esoteric orders where it's like, they basically just like, we'll join our order. We might be bullshit. We're going to keep it secret for now. We're going to give you little bits of things, and maybe they'll all add up later.
Well, I mean, Scientology does that too, right?
Yeah.
Each new level, right? There's a lot of orders that operate like this, where in the old way, you know,
it's the perfect pyramid scheme, you know.
Exactly. And it's not even old. It's still happening. Like, it's the standard, really.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
I don't know if anybody else is doing anything similar to what I'm doing, but what they'll do is typically when you join an esoteric order, you pay an initiation fee, and there's ongoing annual dues, and you only get access to the first chunk of information. And then you have to master that. And then you, to get access to more information, you have to pay another initiation fee. And sometimes your annual dues go up. And then you get another chunk, and you have to be, you have to apply, and you have to be approved by some authority figure. And, you know, typically people think of Luciferianism as a left-hand path. How left-hand path is that? You know, where you have to get permission from some authority figure to do the next set of exercises or get access to the next set of teachings, you know?
Well, we've gotten a lot out of talking about this. We were we were originally talking about discussing the idea of like the overlap between Thelema and Luciferianism. Is there an overlap, and what form does it take, or what differences or similarities there are, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, one thing that I wanted to mention about it is that even though people typically assume that Luciferianism is a left-hand path, I think there is some nuance there. I don't think that it cleanly fits within the left-hand path, like some adjacent paths such as Satanism or Setian philosophy or things like that. Because in Luciferianism, you have that altruistic drive to emancipate others from their ignorance, basically, that the people are subjugated by the systems of power that exist in the world that exploit their ignorance. And Luciferians have that drive to share that knowledge, even at great personal risk sometimes, because of that potential backlash from people who benefit from that system of power retaliating.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Prometheus, right?
Yeah. It's a perfect analogy.
Yeah. And so there is that altruistic aspect of it, which you don't find in any other left-hand path.
Yeah, I feel like, because with Thelema, it seems to me that it's pretty much, it's like that, because that sounds to me very similar to the idea of the Bodhisattva, in a sense.
Yes.
It's not the same thing, but it's a similar idea in the sense that it's like spreading that light of knowledge or wisdom to all other beings. So rather than taking, you know, cessation from existence for oneself and that sort of thing. I don't feel like with Thelema, the idea of cessation from existence seems unpalatable. And uninteresting. It feels more like, why don't we just learn to engage with existence, recognizing that it ultimately can be seen as sorrow, but then being able to re-engage with it in such a way as to turn that sorrow into joy, where you're not trapped within that sorrow. You can recognize sorrow, suffering, all these things can be part of existence, but once you recognize that and become, you know, at least, I guess you could say, objective to it rather than just caught up in it, you can then engage with reality and accept that suffering as a spice, so to speak. I think Crowley would put it that way. But I feel like Luciferianism is, I would assume that it seems to be kind of on the same trajectory, you know, at least as compares to the Bodhisattva Buddhist kind of approach.
I agree. And I've used that analogy before too, or that comparison to the ideal of the Bodhisattva. That's something that I definitely relate to. And I think that it's similar. Like, it's not the same, but it's quite, there's a lot of similarities there to the idea of the Bodhisattva.
I remember I had gotten to the point with Buddhism where I was like, okay, I'm going to make the Bodhisattva oath. And then it was pretty much that time that I started to discover Thelema. So it was almost like being handed, you know, the instruction manual. But yeah, and that's the thing. It's like the more that I talk with you about, I mean, it's easy to make assumptions about what Luciferian must be or probably is and that sort of thing. But that seems like the more that I talk to you, the more the ideas behind Luciferianism seem to align with my ideas about Thelema, so that it's almost like just putting different names on a very similar kind of animal. But I don't know if – do you have any opinions about the divergences where Luciferianism might sort of diverge from Thelema?
Yeah, well, I think that ultimately Thelema is a – I mean, there's controversy about this as well, and it doesn't fit easily. There's nuance there as well. But generally, I think people think of Thelema as a right-hand path that does employ some left-hand path technologies or techniques, right?
Yeah, I guess that begs the question, what are we talking about with – right-hand path and left-hand path?
Yeah, so with the right-hand path, ultimately, the goal is a static union with the divine, typically, is what the definition that's out there. And to be honest, I find that as I progress in my own path, the distinction between the two becomes less and less important.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, people will say that on the right-hand path, you're seeking a static union with the divine, you know, is the easiest way that I can describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of thelema, I would say, right? Emptying your every last drop into the cup of Babylon and going into the abyss, you know, and leaving behind even your HGA or Holy Guardian Angel and everything like that. And I feel like with Luciferianism, I would say the majority of Luciferians probably have apotheosis, personal apotheosis, as one of their major goals. And you could think of that, I mean, literally it means becoming a god.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of it as becoming a force of nature in your own right.
Mm-hmm.
That your will becomes part of how things end up playing out
mm-hmm.
in the grand dream.
That's the funny thing is, like, I feel like, yeah, as you move farther and farther along both paths, I feel like they'll probably align somewhere along there, because I feel like the distinction, if it either becomes meaningless or it becomes all too clear.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like that idea of your establishing your will. I think the thelemic conception is as you're moving closer and closer, your will aligns with that of the entire universe. So by doing your will, by doing the universal will, you're doing your will and vice versa, so that it's like there's no distinction anymore.
Right. And that's very similar. You'd find something like that in the concept of Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
And also in Taoism, that concept is very prevalent. And I find that the Luciferian idea of apotheosis is very similar to the Taoist idea of Taoist immortals.
Mm.
Or even the idea of an ascended master,
mm-hmm.
becoming an ascended master in a sense. Similar to those things. But with Taoism, to become a Taoist immortal, you essentially align yourself with the universal will.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big part of, or at least not coming into conflict with it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, you do have branches of Luciferianism referred to as anti-cosmic Luciferianism, mm-hmm. where they feel that that universal will or that cosmic will is, that starts to get into some ideas of Gnosticism as well. There's different ways of taking that Gnostic thought. And one way is basically completely abandoning that cosmic will completely. And another one is trying to correct it,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, where we didn't really get into the Gnostic part in our conversation
yeah,
today.
Right.
But maybe we can get into that in another...
Mm-hmm.
Mainly I was going into more of the core Luciferian concepts that are more universal.
Yeah, I guess it does always become a little bit tricky. Even with thelema, that's the case. You know, there's different people with different ideas and that sort of thing. There's people who try to take Crowley out of the equation and, maybe focus on Babylon, for instance, and that sort of thing. And, I don't know the argument there well enough to be able to represent it one way or the other. My focus tends to be, I like to say that I'm orthodox, but pluralist. That I try to like stay really focused on Crowley's writings and the Book of the Law and the important core texts and that sort of thing. Because to me, that's like, that produces a lot of fruit, and I think there's a lot to delve into there and that sort of thing. And at some point, you have to make a choice in terms of what you're focusing on, and that's where my choice is. But I'm also pluralist because I gain more that way. I figure there's all kinds of hadiths running around out there, gaining so much from their vastly different perspectives from my perspective. And as a result of that, I can, rather than everybody doing what I say and doing what I think is the correct path, it's like I gain so much more by getting other people's perspectives on things, you know? So...
That's another overlap with Luciferianism, because as I said, the goal is to become a Lucifer in your own right, rather than, you know, some, like I said, some people do worship Lucifer. I don't. But I seek to become a Lucifer. And the name of the order that I established, Novus Ordo Luciferi, the preferred translation of that into English is New Order of Light Bearers. And the members themselves are the Light Bearers. It's not an order dedicated to an entity with the proper name of Lucifer. It's an order dedicated to the people who are seeking to become Lucifers.
I see.
And each person has their own path to that.
Yeah, yeah. That's the most important thing, I think, as well, is recognizing that it's like everybody has their own path rather than, you know. And so there's like this sort of level of where we have this proliferation of different types of orders and different perspectives on things, you know, like Luciferianism, Thelema, Wicca, and like, you know, I'm just going to spit out whatever comes to mind, but it's like there's so way more thoughts, way more sort of approaches to conceptualizing things than I can even keep track of if I were trying to keep track of them. But there's a certain there's the cranky old man in me that gets annoyed by that. But there's the part of me that recognizes, no, that's kind of like that to some extent, that's the point, you know. I think even within the Thelemic path, there's the idea that there's a certain stage beyond the abyss where when you reach such and such a grade, your next task, one of the major tasks, is to found a new order, you know, and it should be in alignment with the previous order of the AA, which is the system of not Alcoholics Anonymous, of course, but the system of training that Crowley founded with George Cecil Jones. But yeah, there's...
I love that idea.
Yeah, that idea of founding your own order. It's like giving your conceptualization of the universe and then going on to found your own order as well. That's pretty profound. You know?
Yeah, I love it. I love that idea. And for somebody to get to that point where they can do that, that's a great thing that they've managed to crystallize, in a sense.
Yeah.
To an extent where they have something to give in that manner.
Is there a good place for people to go to get in touch with your Novus Ordo Luciferi?
Yeah. you can go to novusordoluciferi.org. And I'm actually revamping that website to turn it into a full-on platform where all of the courses are laid out with quizzes and all that stuff, progress bars and the whole thing. I'm really excited to launch that, but it hasn't been launched yet. But you can go there. And there's also a Patreon that a lot of the members are, or probably the majority of members are, basically paying their $5 dues through. And also, what I would also recommend is there is a public free Discord server that I run, that I've run since, it's associated with a group, a non-dogmatic, non-hierarchical kind of community hub called the Luciferian Research Society. And I founded that in 2009.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of just a gathering place for people who are Luciferian or adjacent paths to come together and to cross-pollinate ideas, find people to collaborate on projects with, to share what they're doing, to share their projects and that sort of thing. And sometimes you'll also find within that LRS, the Luciferian Research Society, you'll find different orders that operate in the Luciferian community that also utilize that space to help them coordinate their own activities within the larger community. And there's a website for that, luciferianresearch.org. But there's also a Discord server that's completely free to join. And it's pretty active. People are in there talking every day. And that's probably one of the best places to get into the community.
Yeah, I gotta say, I really do like the setup for Discord. Seems to lend itself really well for these kinds of communities, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And you can get in there and you can interact with a bunch of different people who are practicing in their own different ways. And you can learn more about the NOL. You can learn about Michael W. Ford's order. And you can learn about other different, you know, groups, as well as you don't even have to be part of a group. You can just be a solo practitioner and interact with the greater Luciferian community through that as well.
Very cool. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me with this discussion this evening. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on.
Well, 93. Thanks for listening. Find Toronto Philema online. Like, comment, share, and subscribe, and help us grow. And join us again in the darkly splendid abodes.